It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Earlier this week, City Council gave final approval to a bill requiring employers to provide paid sick days to workers. The Paid Sick Days Act requires employers with 15 or more employees to allow workers to accrue 1 hour of paid sick time for every 35 hours worked, maxing out at 40 hours of paid sick time. For smaller employers with fewer than 15 workers, employees will cap at 24 hours. The final ordinance amounts to less for workers than what primary sponsor Corey O'Connor had originally intended. His earlier version of the bill offered up to 9 sick days for employees of larger businesses and 5 sick days for smaller businesses. The version passed on Monday also allows small businesses with fewer than 15 employees to offer only unpaid sick days for the first year of the law's implementation. But still, some groups and business leaders are opposed to government-enforced paid sick days for workers. One of those is the Allegheny Institute, whose president, Jake Halk, calls the ordinance anti-free market and anti-business. And he joins us today by phone for a discussion of the pros and cons of paid sick leave. Jake Halk, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
And also with us in studio is Steve Herzenberg. He's executive director of the Keystone Research Center. Steve Herzenberg, good to have you with us.
Great to be here, Paul.
If you have a comment or question, you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. How do you feel about the bill approved this week by the Pittsburgh City Council to provide paid sick days to workers? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Jake Halk, let's begin with you. You say this ordinance is anti-free market and anti-business. How so?
Well, we're just generally opposed to a government stepping in and telling businesses how they have to operate if it's not directly related to safety or security or some other violation of a criminal law. But before we get to all those objections, let me just point out, they may have a serious legal problem here. I've been doing a little research on this. Home rule counties are municipalities under Title 53, Chapter 29. I'll just read you the law, which says, a municipality which adopts a home rule charter shall not determine duties, responsibilities, or requirements placed upon business, occupations, and employers. And that's pretty straightforward. I'm not sure they're going to survive a lawsuit on this.
Well, in fact, they're...
But assuming they do, I would just say that it's just a step backwards for Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh region is one of the slowest growth communities in the country in terms of new business startups. And if it hadn't been for Marcellus Shale, which was a gift from God, the area would not be doing nearly as well as it is. So I'm really surprised at this. Really, it's a government power grab, and the business community is really upset about it, and it could redound very negatively to the city.
Well, let's go back to what you were saying about the legality of this. There were members of the city council who expressed concerns about this, including Councilwoman Darlene Harris, who says that she is not convinced that the ordinance will stand up to a legal challenge. What about the legality of this, Steve Herzenberg? This is something that that Keystone is in favor of, but there may be a legal snag here. What are your thoughts?
So we're economists. We're not lawyers. We understand that some people think this will survive a legal challenge. So we definitely think it's something that was worth passing. We would disagree with Jake. This is clearly a step forward in our view. And also it's pro-business. It's anti-low-road business. But again, if you look across the country, San Francisco, Seattle, the places that were out front, in terms of a very basic 21st century labor standard, paid sick days, those are places with very dynamic economies, lots of innovation. We want to compete based on innovation, based on employers working with their employees in a partnership. Forcing workers to choose between their health and their job, their kids' health and their job, is pretty 19th century, really. So from an economic point of view as well as a social point of view, this is really smart regulation.
What about what Jake is saying here and that other opponents of this have pointed out, that paid sick days force employers, and I'm quoting what others are saying, force employers to pay workers not to work, and that there will be abuses of the system?
I mean, that's not what a growing body of experience with these laws in other places indicate. People who have paid sick days, use them very modestly. Employers in San Francisco, a few years after they passed their bill, 70% of employers were supportive of the paid sick day legislation. So again, part of the arguments against this are so familiar. They were made against child labor laws. They were made against the first minimum wage laws. They were made against the first health and safety laws. The sky is going to fall. Business is going to be destroyed. None of those things happened. In the end, when you got rid of sweatshops at the beginning of the 20th century, you actually had more companies transition to high productivity strategies. That actually increases living standards over time. Same thing now. The employers that don't have paid sick days are using kind of low wage, high turnover strategies typically. That doesn't lead to service quality, innovation, increases in living standards over time. So again, simple rules like this one, which accommodates the reality of the modern family, when you've got a lot of single parent and dual earner families, people need to be able to stay home and take care of a sick kid. Most of the time in the last 40 years, 35 years, we've had a basic position that families had to accommodate the economy, had to accommodate employers. It's been a very unbalanced approach. Even today, lots of employees suffer from just-in-time scheduling, for example. So you're trying to get childcare, you're trying to organize your life, but you suddenly get called at the last minute because you have to do a new shift, or you get called at the last minute because they don't need you for a shift, and therefore you can't meet your weekly income target. We need balance back in our economy so that families can thrive, communities can thrive, as well as businesses. And we need businesses competing based on something more enlightened than not providing paid sick days.
Jake, what about let me jump in here, if I may. What about what Steve is saying, that this is not only that this is a 21st century a common decency approach to what the real life concerns are that people face, but also that in places where paid sick day ordinances have been enacted, like San Francisco, for example, where the law went into effect in 2007, employers are saying years later that they are either somewhat or very supportive of paid sick days. Does that resonate somewhat with you, Jake?
Well, those are two or three studies that were done in San Francisco that have been thoroughly debunked. I mean, they started out with two-thirds of their employers already offer sick leave, so if 70% support it, it doesn't surprise me very much.
Debunked by whom?
Connecticut.
Debunked by whom?
In Connecticut, 88% of the employers provided it, and only 75% of the employers, after it was enacted, support it. So, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that companies that are already providing sick leave would support a bill that required their competition to provide it.
Well, as you say, most large employers already have such a provision. If that's so, why are we seeing such a big push for this, especially in a city here like Pittsburgh?
Well, it's because the unions and groups like Steve's feel that they have to do something to protect the low-wage, low-skill workers. And, the opportunities that these small businesses provide for people to get a leg up and start in the economy, they don't seem to be worried about possibly wiping some of those people out and folks actually losing their jobs because of this. I mean, it's all right to say that Seattle's still growing because Seattle has a lot of dynamism because of Microsoft and Boeing and so forth. But that's not the same thing as saying those businesses out there really appreciate. In fact, follow-up studies in Seattle show that a lot of those businesses have had to cut their other benefits. Their profits are down. Their costs are up. So, you know, it's just blithe commentary to say that everything's okay in Seattle. It's not.
Steve, Pittsburgh City Councilman Daniel Lavelle, who also voted against this, says he's concerned about the effect the ordinance would have on small businesses. What about his concerns? And what about what Jake is saying, that this is merely something that groups like the Keystone Keystone Research Center support because they're doing it to protect low-wage earners?
Absolutely, we support this because it improves the quality of jobs of low-wage earners, and also actually means many of them don't get fired or don't have to quit when they or a family member gets sick. That kind of stability of employment relationship is critical to people advancing to higher wages over time. Again, when you look at the evidence, common sense, basic standards like this don't hurt employment. In the end, the level of unemployment is guided mostly by other things, like how we manage the overall economy. So, for example, during the decades when we were rapidly raising our minimum wage in the United States, we had periods of the lowest unemployment. So you have one set of tools that really manage the growth and the slowing down of the economy, and then you have another set of tools that really manage what kind of jobs are we going to have, what kinds of basic labor standards are we going to have. And to us, it's like a sport. I mean, every sport has something like a competition committee is what it's called in the National Basketball Association. And you change the rules, not because you want to eliminate competition, but because you want competition that's based on the right things, competing based on companies firing people because they stay home to take care of a sick kid. That's not the kind of competition Pittsburgh needs.
But you have Jake Hulk saying that this is bad for business because, according to the statistics that he is referring to, this will hasten the demise of struggling businesses who might otherwise make it and grow to a point of being able to offer paid sick leave without being mandated to do so. And again, you have the concerns of people like Councilman Lavelle, who says that he voted against it because he thinks it will hurt small businesses.
Yeah, and again, overall it won't, because we have another set of tools, including the Federal Reserve Bank, that manage interest rates, manage the heating and cooling of the overall economy. So in the end, the number of small businesses you have is not impacted much by the kinds of basic rules that you require businesses to abide by. So the good news is that we can have decent social standards that are compatible with the modern family and compatible with strong communities, and it doesn't hurt employment growth. And again, long term, when you lift your labor standards and force and lift up the floor in terms of the rules that the companies have to abide by, you redirect competition towards increasing productivity, quality, service, innovation. In the end, that's a recipe for higher growth.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We are talking about the bill approved earlier this week by City Council, given final approval to require employers to provide paid sick days for workers. Joining us here in studio is Steve Herzenberg. He's Executive Director of the Keystone Research Center. Also with us by phone is Jake Hulk, who is President of the Allegheny Institute. If you have a comment or question, and we have folks who are already lined up on the phone who we'll get to, 412-246-2002. And also, you can reach us via email at essspgh@wesa.fm, on Twitter at essspgh. Let's go to Sam in Shadyside. Sam, thanks for waiting. You're on with Jake Hulk and Steve Herzenberg.
Well, I've been listening to discussion, and there's so many different ways to go at this, but I think I'll stick with what I originally wanted to say, which was that I remember when they raised a tax on alcoholic beverages in the city, and everybody thought everybody was going to go under. It was just going to be the end of the world, and nothing like that happened. And in many cities, not just Seattle, I want to add, they've raised the minimum wage, much to the protests of business associations and chambers of Congress, that it was going to be bad for small business. And in the end, it didn't. I think the main thing when talking about raising, allowing people paid sick leave is apart from the fact that you're leaving people now in a position of having to choose between whether to get medication or whether to put food on the table or, you know, work while they're sick, I think the other point to be made is that if they continue to be paid, then they'll continue to be able to get their prescriptions, their groceries, and that just puts money in the economy, and that's good for business because, you know, the real job creators here in the local economy are workers and consumers. They're the ones who create jobs.
That's a good point. It's a good point, Sam. And Jake Hulk, what about what Sam is saying, that this is A, not penalizing workers who might be sick or who have children or a spouse who is sick that need to be taken care of, that if you penalize them, if you don't pay them for taking time away to either heal themselves or others, that it is disrupting the wheels of the economy, that paid sick leave, in fact, keeps those wheels turning.
Well, that's like saying welfare is a boost to the economy. Nancy Pelosi was fond of saying unemployment benefits are great for the economy. Well, you know what?
Wait a minute, Jake. I gotta call you out on this. Are you seriously comparing welfare to paid sick days for workers?
It's a form. Yes, it's a mandated benefit. That's the whole problem I have with Steve's argument is that I don't believe it is the government's responsibility to try to manage the economy. Not in a micro sense. There's some things we do to make sure businesses don't behave in unsafe ways, or they don't violate other laws that are inimical to public safety or health. But this is not, this is going to the point that you're telling a would-be entrepreneur who might be thinking about starting a business, look, you can't run this business the way you want to in the city of Pittsburgh.
So
even if he had people who were willing to come to work for him.
So I'm actually,
at the rates and the benefits that he's offering, you're now telling the business he can't operate under those conditions. And I just find that just too heavy-handed. It's a step backwards in freedom. I mean, the notion that we're somehow going to grow a great economy with continued government regulations piling up,
right,
like Obamacare, for instance, I mean, that has cost so many people full-time jobs, it's just not even funny.
All right, let's let Steve respond. Sure. All right, okay. All right, Jake, I think we're getting off the track a little bit, Jake.
If Jake will let me jump in a little, I'm going to partly agree with one thing he said. I don't think it's the government's job to regulate the economy in a micro sense either. But the fact is that, again, basic standards like paid sick days in a world in which you've got many families with, again, a single parent or dual earners isn't micromanaging the economy. Part of what it's doing is actually solving a market failure, which is something that Jake certainly understands, which is some of the costs of people going to work when they're sick. There's a research literature on presentism, you know, which is the opposite of absenteeism. So it's when someone goes to work sick, then they make their coworkers sick. Or if they work in a restaurant, you know, in the back of the house, for example, they make their customers sick. Now, the low-wage employer maybe doesn't take that into account because they don't pay the health care bill of that customer. Again, this is not micromanagement. It's just basic rules. We don't want basketball games in which players win by maiming each other, and we don't want economic competition in which employers win the competitive battle by not providing paid sick days.
Let's take a call from Nikki in Stanton Heights. Nikki, thank you for waiting. You're on with Jake Hulk and Steve Hertzenberg. Hi, Nikki. Are you there? Okay, no Nikki. Let's go to Casey in Beaver County. Casey, hi. You're on Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to state that I am a small businessman and that a mandatory sick pay would hurt small businesses. And here's the reason. It increases our costs and it makes us stand in a gap. If we're required to provide pay for people who are not working, but there's no one is required to compensate us for the increased cost, then we're standing in the gap. And it's a cost of business. It hurts. It hurts our competitive position. And earlier, your one guest said that these are not taken advantage of. And I know for a fact, in talking to people over many, many years, that nobody lets a paid sick day go unpaid. They will absolutely take advantage of every single one of them. And that's all I had to say.
Well, it's an important point, Casey. So first of all, what about his point, Steve, that it is a burden on small businesses, that some businesses, you know, even if we'll give them the benefit of the doubt, that they might believe this is the right thing to do, if they can't afford it, as Casey is saying, then why should it be mandated?
In the end, I think employers that think they can't afford it or actually being short-sighted, penny wise and pound foolish. The research shows that when people come back to work, they tend to be more productive because they want to make up for the work they missed. Again, an employment relationship is a two-way street. I'm a small employer too. We have like 8 people. We provide paid sick days. You know, in the end, you get good work, you get high levels of productivity because people feel a sense of purpose, they feel valued. Again, providing paid sick days is part of having a productive employment relationship. So again, from our point of view, in the end, you have minimum labor standards in order to shape the competition in a way that's both socially desirable, good for families and communities, but also ultimately economically desirable. And again, paid sick days seems to us, in this day and age, an idea that time has come.
And you obviously have a lot of faith in the people that work for you, as all employers should, and employees should live up to that faith. But let's face it, human nature is such that I don't know how widespread it is. I don't know what the stats are, but we all know that there are probably some people out there that do it take advantage of this. And Casey, go ahead, Jim.
Your point, Paul. Recent studies have shown that 50% of people admit to calling in sick when they're not really sick. So, I mean, that is a big problem for businesses, and there's no getting around that. But Steve's point is he wants to create a society of forcing business to do something, telling them this will be better for you in the long run. Well, as Mr. Kane said, in the long run, we're all dead. These businesses have got to survive over the next 2 or 3 years, and hopefully will grow. And they will reach a point where being able to make sick leave a part of their benefit package would come naturally to them. That's my point. Why punish businesses that are struggling or just starting out or just hanging on and saying, well, you got up. In addition to the cost of the sick leave program, all the data collection, the record keeping, the reporting, my suspicion is that given that the fine for failure to comply is $100 per offense, a lot of businesses are going to say, you know what, I'll pay the $100 fine until it gets to be too high, and then I might think about either leaving town or offering sick leave. But I think a lot of businesses are just going to throw their hands up and say, I'm not doing this.
But what about?
And I think that'll be the biggest problem. And even if the city collects the $100 fine for failure to comply, it doesn't help the employee one bit.
So what about what Jake is saying, Steve, that that there are a lot of businesses that will simply pay the fine and not give the paid sick leave?
I don't think that's likely to be much of a problem. I also don't think the compliance costs, Jake's exaggerating them. I mean, any organization that has timesheets, clearly it's easy enough to track sick leave on the timesheet. We certainly do that. Again, Jake's economic perspective tends to ignore what drives long-run growth of living standards. It's not pinching pennies. It's productivity growth. It's innovation. Whether it's Costco or Trader Joe's, in every industry, including low-wage industries like retail, the two examples I just gave you, there are many examples of employers who provide paid sick days and have an overall relationship with their employees that they train them well, they have low turnover, they have to have higher wages and benefits than their competitors. You know, in the end, we want a set of rules. Companies can compete in different ways, but if you shape the rules so that you make it a little bit easier for companies to compete in partnership with their employees and a little bit harder to make them compete in short-sighted ways by pinching pennies that won't actually increase productivity in 5 years or 10 years, then in the end, the good news, you know, you have to be reasonable about it and they have to be sensible standards. But the good news is that 5 or 10 years down the road, you have, you know, made social progress and you've also made economic progress.
Let's go to Nikki, who is Nikki from Stanton Heights, who's back apparently. Nikki, thanks for waiting. Thanks for getting back in contact with us.
Yeah, thank you. I was actually at a restaurant having trouble getting off of mute. So thank you for calling back. So I was calling because I have been a server in the past, and a lot of my friends are servers. As I said, I'm in a restaurant right now, and I am so thankful that this paid 6 days ordinance passed, and I applaud the council for passing it in Pittsburgh. You know, this is not a radical idea. The idea that people should be able to stay home when they're sick in the year 2015 is really, you know, it's not wild and crazy. And I just want to share my experience. When I was a server, when I was first hired, I asked, what's the policy around paid sick days? You know, I grew up in a household where my mother was a teacher, and I knew that, you know, if she got sick or if one of us got sick, that we were going to be able to go to the doctor and take care of it. I was told, and this is not uncommon in the service industry, I was told that if I was sick, I needed to come into work and hope to be sent home. So I saw people work with the flu, bronchitis. I actually had pink eye myself one time, which is highly contagious. And, you know, not to be gross, but pus and, you know, things were dripping from my eyes.
We get the idea.
Delivering food.
Nikki, we get the idea there, and you've made your point. So let me get Jake back into the discussion here. Jake, you know, obviously you have faith in and would be probably more than willing to give businesses the benefit of the doubt. But what about what Nikki is saying? Certainly, you realize that there are some unscrupulous employers who would force an employee to drag themselves into work to the detriment not only of themselves, but to the other workers and the customers.
Go find another job. That's the whole point here.
But wait a minute. That's you're making it sound like it's a lot easier, though, than
that strenuous. Go find another job. There are plenty of places that you can go find work that will provide with sick leave or at least be more generous about these situations. If you're working for a miserly old skin flint, leave.
All right. What about what Jake is saying? He says you can just walk away.
Steve? Paul, as you sort of almost started to say yourself, a lot of workers, particularly lower wage workers, may not have a lot of choices in the job market.
Why is that, Steve?
Because
there are not enough businesses growing and starting up to hire the people, and you want to interfere with the one thing that can help them, and that is a profit motive.
No, because we had...
That's the whole point here.
Because we had high rates of unemployment as we recovered slowly from the Great Recession, and we recovered slowly because actually Republicans in Washington made it very difficult to manage the economy in a way which
national policy.
We've had fiscal policy.
But
Jake, you're interrupting me.
Let Steve respond here, please.
Again, you've got a theory about why sometimes unemployment is high. I think your theory is wrong. And I've got a different theory, which points to the management of the economy. My theory, I think, is clearly in the wake of the Great Recession and the Recovery Act. You know, even John McCain's economist has done very careful studies showing how much higher unemployment would have been 15% nationally if we hadn't done the Recovery Act. So again, you're not right about what influences the overall level of employment. And again, back to the critical point is that
if I can jump in, because we need to take a gentlemen
sidetracked here.
Okay, hang on a second. Let's agree to disagree, gentlemen. Please, let's agree to disagree on what is causing a shortfall in jobs. And I would like to continue with this conversation. We do need to take a break. We have other callers and people on Twitter who want to get involved. So, gentlemen, if we can keep this going for 10 minutes after the break, does that work for everybody's schedule here?
Great.
Jake?
I can do 10 more.
Okay, great. We need to take a break. This is Essential Pittsburgh. We're talking, in case you haven't figured it out already, about the bill passed by City Council earlier this week requiring employers to provide paid sick days to workers. We'll resume our conversation and take your calls at 412-246-2002. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are continuing with our discussion of the bill approved by City Council requiring employers to give paid sick days to workers, a move that brought a standing ovation from activists when it was announced on Monday. But not everyone is applauding this, and we've heard different opinions from our audience on social media as well as on the phone. We'll get to some of the tweets in a moment. Our guests are Jake Hulk. He is with the Allegheny Institute, and Steve Herzenberg of the Keystone Research Center, debating the pros and cons of paid sick leave. Let's go back to the phones. We have John, who's been waiting for a long time at 412-246-2002. John, well, maybe
he didn't wait too long.
Yeah, evidently John reached his limit. So if we don't have John, let's go to David in Pittsburgh. David, are you with us?
I am here. Hi.
Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi. So I like to look at the numbers. And let's say somebody makes $10 an hour. They need to work, and they have a full-time schedule. That means the business has to invest $15 a week or escrow $15 a week if you account for taxes and everything. So a person has to work 2 months in order to earn 1 day sick time and would basically need to work almost a year, three quarters of a year full time to earn the 40 hours maximum that the bill talks about. So this seems to me to be a very small investment on the part of a small business owner. And if they're doing their business right, they're getting a lot of productivity and profit from that employee's work. It just seems to me to make economic sense to invest in the employee and not to take the employee for granted and just want to take and not give back.
Well, thank you, David. And Jennifer on Twitter echoes your comments. She says loss of jobs is bogus. People have to work 40 hours to earn 1 hour of sick time. Employers can't come up with 1 hour worth of pay each week. Employers have to pay 1 day of sick leave for 2 months of work, and they can't afford it. Maybe they shouldn't be in business. So what about what David and Jennifer are saying? Jake?
Well, that's pretty high-handed, isn't it? We just heard from a businessman who said this is going to be costly, and it's going to threaten his profitability. And these people are saying, well, you need to get with the program and do what we tell you to do. If this was such a great idea and it was going to help businesses to grow and prosper and have better relationships with their employees, they would be doing it voluntarily. Now the government's going to come in and say, well, we know what's best for you. Do it this way.
What about the point, though? What about what they're saying that, you know, really that this isn't that much? And if you can't afford it, then why are you in business? Don't you need to have, you know, some money in hand to make money? Hasn't that always been the thought?
Who's to say? I mean, what an arrogant attitude. A business is making it by the skin of his teeth. The owner's probably putting in 80 hours a week. He's keeping people employed, and they're saying, well, if you can't afford to pay sick leave, you ought to go out of business and put those people out of work.
Well,
I mean, that's just Well, that's just wrong in so many levels.
Well, Jake, with all due respect, I'm gonna throw this at you. You said earlier that if an employee was having trouble with their employer, that they should, if they didn't feel they were being treated fairly, they should just quit and find another job. If what these people are saying is, if you can't run your business the way that we feel is fair, then maybe you shouldn't be in business. Isn't that...
Well, but who's going to determine what's fair? I mean, the business owner, if this was such a great deal and it would redound to his business prosperity, he would be doing it voluntarily. The fact that he isn't tells you that he's scraping by, perhaps. He might be making some money, but who are we to make that decision? He's putting his capital on the line. He's putting a huge number of hours probably on the line trying to make the thing go, and we're going to punish him. I mean, that just sounds like
Steve, let's throw that ball.
You know, that's beyond high end.
Sure, let's put the ball in Steve's court here. And what about what Jake is saying? He's saying that we shouldn't be telling, you know, businesses are barely making it. If this is something that's going to break a business, if this is what some people in business are saying, then should the government be forcing this situation upon them?
So first of all, Jake's argument that if this was so good for business, they'd be doing it already is a completely circular argument. It's sort of a lot of conventional economists have this really silly theory about employers making the most profitable choice over all possible futures. It's the only person who could believe that is somebody who's been to economics graduate school. The fact is that whether it's sweatshops or modern employers that don't provide paid sick days, employers sometimes do things that are short-sighted, but they don't figure that out.
Well, here's the question. Let me jump in and ask you this: how does the city know if a certain business with 18 employees can better afford the greater paid leave requirements than other businesses with 14 employees?
I mean, that was part of a political compromise, right? So if it was up to me, I would have been fine with a uniform 5 days instead of 3 days for the smallest businesses. So, because again, I do buy the basic idea that you want a set of simple rules around competition, and if it turns out employers can't be profitable if they're paying less than $7.25 an hour, or if they're not providing paid sick days, again, we're fine with those businesses, going out of business, because in the end, that's good for the economy as well as good for society.
Let's take one last call from David in Pittsburgh. Dave, go ahead. All right, we don't have Dave. So it sounded like Jake, you wanted to respond there.
Yeah, I mean, the notion that somebody should be essentially forced out of business, and that's all right if they can't afford to pay sick leave, even though they can hire people who are willing to work under those conditions. I mean, nobody's having a gun held to their head and saying, go over there and go to work. If they want to leave and go to a company that pays sick leave, there are plenty of them. In fact, probably 75% of the people who work in businesses with more than 30 or 40 employees have that. We're talking about a very small group of very small businesses here, primarily those with less than 15 employees, whose costs are going to go up. They're going to have a tough time if they abide by this. And that's why I say most of them are going to say, you know what, I'm not complying with this. What's the city going to do to me? They're going to take my license away and put these people out on the street? I don't think it's going to happen.
Whitehall on Twitter says this is just a matter of human dignity. Is that what it comes down to?
I mean, certainly from our point of view, given the demands on modern workers and modern families, absolutely, paid sick days are part of human dignity for the 21st century worker.
We have to call this a conversation, but it has been certainly a comprehensive one, and I thank you both for participating. Steve Herzenberg, Executive Director of the Keystone Research Center, with us here in studio. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Also, Jake Halk, who is the president of the Allegheny Institute, joining us by phone. Jake, thank you for being so generous with your time.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Coming up, The Art of Storytelling. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.